Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your life connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Integrity in Action, live on Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, monthly on the third Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. This is your opportunity to listen live with host Lois Shulman, empowerment coach, facilitator, and public speaker of Integrity in Action, LLC. She will interview with sensitivity, unconditional love, and without judgment individuals who have chosen to exemplify the highest levels of ethical principles, sound moral character, and honesty. Each month, a featured guest will share their story. These interviews will give listeners an opportunity to feel the passion and the emotion of the person being interviewed, as well as inspire listeners to entertain a new perspective from which to expand their own understanding. When this occurs, we move beyond the limitations of our current thinking to heal and become more aware, awake, and expansive. And now I give you your host, Lois Shulman.
Welcome to the show, hey, Lois.
Thank you. I am honored to sit here in the Whitestone Christian Center with Pastor Albert. Pastor Albert, your time is valuable to God, your family, and to those you serve through your work. It was through the men and women I worked with that I heard about the visionary Pastor Albert. I wanted to meet the pastor of whom they spoke, because they were men and women I respected and I learned from. They were each an exemplary human being. When I met Pastor Albert, I realized that the blessing that he was to the world. It is an honor that you, Pastor Albert, have accepted my invitation to share with the listeners of this podcast your story. You have said that God gives a mission to each of us that is bigger than we are. You, Pastor Albert, have accepted your mission, and I have read that since the age of 13, you have devoted yourself to personal growth, learning, and commitment to fulfilling God's blessing in the mission that was given to you. What led you at such a young age to begin to develop your mission?
Actually, it was a very interesting I grew up in the Democratic Republic of the Congo in Central Africa, and I was just drawn very early to the church life, I believe, by my mother, who's still alive, bless her soul, and she is a very devoted, you know, person and praying person, and through her, I was able to embrace, you know, at that younger age, especially through songs, you know, because her being part of the Catholic Church back then, they didn't just have the Roman, you know, type of service that we'll do, but in order to make it more appealing to the Congolese people, they had this, back then it wasn't even Congo, it was called Zaire, the country. They had this Zairean, you know, kind of, you know, songs that they would sing in the church, and I just was driven into it, and I became an altar boy. And through that, my just, you know, zeal and trying to learn more about this God, it just kept bubbling in me. I just, you know, kept on asking questions, because although I was so young, but at the same time, I always felt compelled to do more and not just to act as, you know, my age, but to always try to, I wouldn't say impress my parents or my peers or people around me, but always try to do something better in order to help somebody else. And that drew me into it.
Is the age of 13 entry into manhood in your religion?
So not really, because I was considered being really kind of young, but I was blessed, you know, to be an open-minded, whereby I was young, but I didn't sort of look young directly, and my ways of, you know, interacting and, you know, talking. And it was just different, because I never had even had a chance to have really friends at my age.
I just want to bring one thing to the listeners. They can't see your physical body.
Yes.
But your physical presence is very, you're very statuesque. You're very tall. You're very, a great presence. was this always the case for you?
Well, thank you. I don't know if it was always the case for me, but I believe that as I begin to seek more of God, of knowing Him and trying to serve as much as possible, I believe that God began to build this confidence in me, because I believe that we most of the time reflect who we are on the inside. You know, because when we talk about, you know, stature and physique and approach, all of that is who we are on the inside. You know, for example, if I'm standing here with you, Lois, and we're sitting down, we're talking, I want to be as best as possible to you. I want not just you to hear my words, but my soul and my spirit. Therefore, there is sort of that exercise that keeps me, you know, approaching things a certain way, whereby I really want you to get the bottom line. I just don't want you to get my words, but I want you to get who I am. Because once somebody identifies with your heart, the mission is already accomplished, because at that time, you're able to have that communion of vision, because it's not just the paper we sign. It's not just, you know, the contract that we do, but do I have your bond? Do I have your heart? Do I have what is really driving you? Because once people understand you at that level, it brings another level of awareness, and people are able to achieve more. Because I just have one simple saying that guides me every day that I share with people. I say impossible is a word that is when we refuse to borrow each other's gift to do the task ahead. Whenever we put ourselves together and we can agree and bring our gifts together, impossible doesn't exist. There's so much impossibilities around us simply because I refuse to borrow your gift and you refuse to borrow mine. And that's why the train stops. But as long as we are willing to search deeper in us and see how connected we are, we can do it. We can do anything. I mean, you name it, anything that we can do to benefit our immediate families, our churches, our, you know, place of worship and our communities, it becomes feasible. Because at that time is I'm saying, Lois, you got something to bring on the table. Come on, bring it. I got something, I'll bring mine. And if we bring it all together, the word miracle, it's there. Because the miracle is what? Is basically God meeting our best. But as long as we haven't brought our best, God can. So to answer your question, it's just who I am and what I've been trying to live by the grace of God. And it reflects on the outside.
Beautifully.
Thank you. Thank you.
So going back to from the age of 13,
yeah.
I read that you also studied law.
Yeah. Yes, I studied law because, I mean, my background from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, I mean, you know, it's a third world country, and in most of our countries there's not really a way to sort of, you know, make a decent living unless you go to the university. Because, you know, when you try to learn maybe a trade, you know, you want to be a carpenter, you want to be, you know, maybe, you know, an electrician and all of that, you're not really going to be able to make any decent living. So most of us, after our high school, we'll go straight to university. And actually, my father wanted me to study medicine. So, you know, we had an issue with that and all of that. And finally, I decided to embark into law school. And it was really, really an enjoyable experience for me. And I left the capital city, which is Kinshasa, and flew about 2,000 kilometers away from Kinshasa, which was Lubumbashi, the second largest city of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And that's where I'll go to school for full 9 months. I'll be in the south. Then I'll come back for 3 months vacation, and I'll go again for about 5 years. I did that in order to complete law school.
So then what happened after the law school?
After the law school, was already during the law school and in the between, there was already callings, you know, I thought those needs for me to serve God, you know, more. But at the same time, too, I realized that I needed a strong education, you know, to be able to make it. And in the between, I began to associate myself with so many, you know, evangelical movement in the Congo and a lot of churches whereby my love of singing started flowing and I became a worship leader. Then I'd go to different seminars and I'd go to different training camps. So I kept both, you know, while going to school. In fact, even at the university, we had a group of students where we would meet every Thursday and we'll pray together. You know, we'll do this revival, you know, meetings and all of that. And it was just a driven force in me. And but one thing that I must say is that I never wanted to serve God at other people's expenses. What do I mean by that? Because in the environment in which I grew up, it was more like the preacher or the teacher of the word had to be taken care of by the people. They had to pay his bills. They had to do. So to me, that was something that I wasn't willing to do. So therefore, I ended up, you know, not trying to be a burden, and that's why I kept on working and working through, you know, seminars and all of that to make sure that up to this day, I'm a pastor of a church, but I'm not on the church payroll because I do, you know, other work and all of that, and that's how I make anything somebody blesses me from. It's from their heart. But I don't push myself into saying, hey, I've devoted myself for God, therefore you must take care of
me. I must say also your dress, how you come when I see you at services and how you look now in a very sharp black suit with a beautiful tie with a white shirt. You always dress impeccable.
Thank you, Lois.
I think it's honoring of the people that you serve.
Yes, it is. It is because and that's a little bit also cultural because, you know, in our culture, you know, we do believe that, you know, it's how you appeal and you present yourself that matters. And also, you know, being able to work in different places with some, you know, businesses and all of that, sometimes it's required for me to be like that, not just on Sunday. But in order to create that balance, because not everybody may be able to reach your level or to be at where you are, we have a lot of times where we do the dress down summer services and all of that where we identify with each other, because it's also important to understand that if we don't be careful in our, you know, quest for God, how we appear may also come intimidated to us. It's going to go like, I can't go to service because I don't have that nice dress to put on, or I don't have that beautiful, you know, suit to wear on and all of that. So every now and then we have to let people know that this is just the envelope that we're trying to represent, but the spirit on the inside and the soul are more important than anything else that we can put our hands on.
But I think, true, you set an inspiration for people that when they listen to you, they know that they want to aspire to carry themselves like you do,
yes,
to dress like you do.
Yes. Yes.
Not the cost of the clothes,
right,
but just
how
you wear your clothes.
Exactly.
So I think you're an inspiration to people to,
yes,
attain that higher level for themselves.
Definitely. I try, Lois. And to me, you know, that's important as well. But it's not as important as me being able to touch their hearts by the grace of God and their soul. Because I always believe that, you know, we want that holistic approach, you know, body, soul, you know, spirit, body, soul. But the body is the last part. And sometimes the danger is what if we have also invested so much into it that we're now neglecting the other two parts that are important. Because I want to look good on the outside, but I want my inside to be better.
Yes, but you're outside.
Yes.
Your smile,
yes,
the twinkle in your eyes,
yes,
when you talk to people and when,
yes,
you're up speaking,
yes,
much overshadow or your suit.
Thank
I don't
you
want to leave the impression to anybody listening that it's about your dress.
Yes.
Because you,
yes,
have an incredible smile and energy and love, and that just shines through to people.
Thank you.
So I want to go back. So how did you get from your learning at university,
yes,
your love of song and everything,
yes,
to coming to America?
Well, coming to America was actually a little bit adventurous as well, because it didn't just happen overnight, but I had a background whereby My father was in the military. My father was in the military for 35 years. He's a retired general today. And as the regime was changing in Africa during the time, I was born and raised under one president. He was a dictator in the Congo, and he ruled the country for about 32 years. And then as he was being, you know, pushed out of power, a new government was coming. There was actually war and different things that happened that was kind of dark at that time. And that kind of propelled me and pushed me to also leave the country. So I didn't really, you know, this part of me that I sometimes don't really display to people that much, there were some chaotic events that led to me leaving Africa, leaving the Congo, and basically, you know, not knowing at that particular time what was happening with the family, because I was down south in Lubumbashi, and the family was living in Kinshasa, in the capital city. So that break was really, really brutal. But it really enhanced my faith as well, because during those dark moments, I realized that God is not just in charge of our good times, but God is also in charge of our bad times. And that's the time I begin to understand the story of Job, for example, who had all the calamities that happened to him at one night. One day he experienced so much loss, but he was still able to bless God. And I began to ask myself, what are the values that were bestowed onto me? You know, love, you know, hardworking. One of my father's saying that have kept me throughout the years, he always said, life is a fight, my son. Life is a fight. Life is not a piece of cake, but you got to be honorable person. You don't want to cheat people. You got to be able to work hard. And those were the values that I kept, you know, as I was transitioning, leaving the Congo and coming to the United States.
Were your parents blessing you to come here, or was it a struggle?
Well, it was a struggle for them because I'm the last born of a large family. You probably didn't know this, Lois. So, as a baby, you know, my parents, especially my mom, had a hard time, you know, letting me go. But I just believed that at the end of the day, you know, one's destiny is actually, you know, propelled by God. And it's so funny because as we were praying at the law school with some friends, sometimes we have like this word of knowledge that will come, and then because we believe that God can speak to your inner man and to your spirit. And one time one of our friends looked at me and said, Albert, I don't know, but I sense in my spirit that you're going to be a pastor in a foreign land. It's not going to be in the Congo. And that was in 1995 when he gave me that word. And as the turmoil began and I left and all that, and some of these words, we keep them with us. We struggle with them. We don't know how to deal with them. But as years passed by, I began to see how God was shaping me and putting me and preparing me to this position. And I began to look at the journey I've gone through as being a journey orchestrated by God. Even when I hated certain moments in my life, I hated the fact that I left the Congo. I hated some of the reality that I had to face, the hardship and all of that. But when I sit here today, I say, God, I bless you. I thank you because you knew it all. I just didn't know. Forgive me. And sometimes, you know, I have those mixed emotions when I look back and I say, well, this moment was so painful. But look at the joy it has brought me throughout the years and throughout the time that I've been able to, you know, be part of something greater than myself. Because, you know, and I don't know if I could probably say this, you know, for me to have a multicultural, you know, church, and especially coming from the Congo, a French-speaking country, and being able to lead a congregation where most people are actually coming from English-speaking background, it's not a small thing. Still struggle with my English, I would say that, because every now and then I have to think in French, and, you know, in different languages, and it gets a little bit, you know, busy up there. But I try my best, and my teaching abilities have also helped me a lot because I do teach French as well.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what your head feels like when you're doing this, but
yeah,
when it comes out, the words come out, it is impeccably beautiful English.
It's got so.
That is absolutely.
It's amazing.
God.
It's amazing.
So I know we're skipping a lot.
Yes, and I'm sorry. I'm not a good person maybe to just focus on something.
No, you're
but
perfect.
I try. Okay, thank you.
No, you're perfect.
Thank you.
Coming from Africa.
Yes.
How did you begin to build this center?
Wonderful. This center has begun to be built actually when I came to the United States. I was part of a great group of brothers and sisters, originally mostly from Ghana, Nigeria, and different parts of the world, sort of saying, and we begin to talk about what we wanted to see, you know, because certain things you have a vision in your heart, but you need people. Because if people don't believe in the vision, there's no way you can do it. So around the fall of 2008, we met at one of our brothers' basement, and we began to talk about it because we felt the need to empower, especially, you know, not just, you know, any kind of people, but we felt the need for the African-based community in the Metro Detroit area to be empowered through the gospel and also try to create opportunities for them, because we realize that most people come because they are not well-oriented, because they don't know which way to go. They feel lost, and, you know, a lot of things happen. So then we met together in the basement in the fall of 2008. We began to discuss about it, and we had to put the bylaws together and try to do all the hard work as well, you know, and all the hard questions. Where's the finances going to come from? And I remember on that day in the basement, I told everybody the same thing that I've just told you a while ago, that impossible is a word that exists when we refuse to borrow each other's gift. I say, we're going to put deep into our pockets, we're going to put the money together, and we'll start this center by the grace of God. And then we had about one or two meetings in that basement. Then we decided to rent a hall at the Hilton Garden Hotel down here in South Hills.
Yeah.
And we had about three or four Sundays, about two Sundays there. Then after that, we were driving down 6 Mile and Beach Daily. That's where we saw Lighthouse Community Church of God. And then I went there and met Reverend Booker, Demetrius Booker, great man of God. He was able to allow us to start renting with them. So then for 5 years, we'll pray in the afternoon. So we'll gather every Sunday from 1:30 to 3:30. And then we started, you know, raising money, because I told the people, I said, we are moving by faith. By faith without works is dead. So we got to keep on, you know, building our funds. And after that, after 5 years, God was able to bless us with this building here, which is a miracle by itself, because for 5 years, we were raising money to acquire a building. And I remember as we were going through that, what was in my heart is the same thing. Impossible is something when we don't bring our best. And then we went to the bank that we were banking with, and we were pre-approved. So when we got this building, they asked for $169,000. And then as we were getting into the commotion to get everything together, we went back to the bank, and the bank said, well, you've been in existence for 5 years. You cannot be given such a loan because you're a church. You depend on offering and tithe. That's benevolent giving. We cannot do that. And then everybody was discouraged, you know. And then I told people, I say, God is still in the business of doing miracles when we bring our best. All we got to do is bring our best. I began to negotiate. And at the time, by the grace of God, I believe we had raised about $85,000 in the account. And then I called the owner. We discussed. And then I gave them a $5,000 deposit. We began to bargain with them. I told them, I said, we don't have the money from the bank. We can pay you cash. I said, okay, no problem. If it's cash, we went from 169 to 150 all the way down to
$85,000. Oh, my gosh.
And listen to this, Lois. As we got to $85,000, everybody was jubilant. Everybody was celebrating. I said, forget it. It's got to go down again. People say, Pastor, the deacons and some of the elders in the church said, Pastor, you cannot do that. I say, I am a visionary. It's a new building. We're going to need some money to maybe do some touch-ups. So I went down and negotiated with them. And finally, we were able to purchase the building for $75,000. So we got the keys to this place. We had $10,000 to start building the place and fixing and all of that. And it has been an amazing testimony. We wanted to go and get a loan for $169,000. God was providing ways for us to buy the building cash for $75,000.
Does the bank know this story?
No, they don't know. They don't know.
Oh, my gosh, I want to shout it.
Yeah, yeah. It's been, and that's, and then after that, you know, we've been building here and working with different organizations such as Freedom House, like I say, you know, where there are people seeking out political asylum. Every Sunday, the church bus will go pick them up, bring them, you know, and then every quarter we'll do a donation. We do a lot of, you know, ministry and counseling with them as well. And just, you know, try to do something that is different, touching the lives of people, because it's not about what you have. It's about who you are. If you cannot give me who you are, I don't want what you have to give me physically. Because, you know, the Bible says that God so loved the world that he gave. Anything we give must be backed up by love. If love is not the seed upon which your donation is based on, it's in vain. It's already a waste of time. So I've always pushed for us to understand that we need to touch people beyond what we can give them side, because that's just a bridge to connect to the real soul that needs that miracle and that needs that breakthrough.
So the men and women that I worked with,
yes,
that spoke of you,
yes,
this was before the church even existed.
Yes, exactly.
So they knew you as a man that touched their lives in a way and gave them the foundation to be able to get through the extreme challenges that they were facing here in this country.
Correct, correct. And to me, the church is just a result of what we've been working on. And that's why, you know, every now and then I tell people, I say, well, don't be shocked one day if I walk away from this building to go do something else, because it's not the building. It's not the local. It's the gifting of God in us that makes a difference. This is just a center. It's just a place where you and I, by the grace of God, because the place belongs to us, we can sit anytime. We can do meetings and all of that and empower people. But the key element, like you said, Lois, you just said it very well, is who we are and what we do. And as a Christian, I believe, you know, that ministry is not what we do, it's who we are. And if I'm not who I am, I can impact anybody sitting at the bus stop or anyone that I encounter. And when you meet me, the word pastor is the last thing you're going to hear from me. I present myself as Albert, as Ilonga, my African name, or Iwondo, and then we will talk, we'll talk. And maybe at the end, then you will realize that I'm the pastor. Because to me, that's not really essential. What is essential is not the function of title of who I am, but the attribute of that title. What can I do? And then to me, that's the most important thing.
So I also read that you have a mission centered around children.
Yes. Yeah.
And I wanted to hear more about how you engage the children.
Yes, we engage the children because we believe that the children are the greatest, you know, gift that God has also given us. And if we can empower them, it becomes very important to us. So what we do is we divide sometimes classes based on age. And then one thing that I'm always pushing myself and also those who are helping the children is, you know, from our background in Africa, the way we grew up, you know, it was so rich. I'm sure maybe it's also your background, whereby it was more like a conservative society where there was a lot of taboos. There were certain things we wouldn't say, you know, you cannot do. But what I try to do we try to take that, the good part of it, because it also built us to be who we are today, but at the same time also balance it with our children today who are living in a free society whereby their minds count as well. So giving them that both experience, I'll go even my own children, you know, just getting them to understand that they have that African, you know, blood in them, it's a big challenge. Because to all, most of them, there's a disconnect whereby our parents came from Africa, not us. No, no, no. Because we came from Africa, you came from us. You are also African. and you are also part of that heritage. But guess what? We're not going to overwhelm you with the things that you're not even going to be able to put up with. So I believe that, that's the riches that we bring to our children, mainly giving them the best of both worlds and letting them express themselves so we can guide them. Because I believe that every child has a blessed, given potential from God. And even the word white stone, we believe that, you know, in Revelation, that when you are given a white stone, there is a new name that is, it's written on the stone. The only person that knows the name is the bearer of the name. So I believe in your unlimited potential, Louis. I believe that all I'm doing here is just to enhance you to take off to the destiny that God has for you. I can't control it, but I can be an asset to that greatness that God has for you. And that's what we do with the children. And it's amazing to see how, you know, the growth especially. And, you know, we have no taboo, no debate. Like my daughter, she's my first daughter is 13, Charlotte. She'll ask me, Dad, do I have to come to church all the time? I said, no, because the church is a place where we come to lift hands and all go together. But you can have a spiritual moment without you being at a church. So we want them to understand that, so it's not being forced onto them, but it's something that they get to learn. And that free will, the power of choice, I believe, it makes the belief so strong than us coercing or forcing people, because then you turn them to become hypocrites. Only when you're around, they would do the religious activity, but we really don't want
it. I was just watching the time. So also in raising children, though, I shared with you that I came from a small town.
Yes.
My family was, I was not exposed to the outside world. So I thought everything in my world was what made life good. Then when I got out into the broader world,
mm-hmm.
I realized that there was so much more that I wasn't exposed to that I wanted to be a part of. So now in your children's life and in the life of all the children today, and plus having parents that are struggling
yes.
to financially meet their obligations
mm-hmm.
and put bread on the table.
Yes.
I assume that you also address those mothers and fathers.
Yes, yes. Yes, I address those fathers and those mothers as well. And the key here that we try to do, Lois, is what is making sure that we all, number one, I tell the parents, myself including, and everyone, is make sure you are, number one, giving your best. Because most of the time in life, we get defeated easily when we forget the final outcome. At the end of the day, you want to be able to look at yourself in the mirror and say, I've done everything possible for me to help, and it did not work. My parent told me a story, especially my dad when he was young, because he grew up in the village with poverty. He said that they were so poor to the level where every now and then their mom, my grandmother, would just take a big, you know, bowl and just put it on the firewood and let it burn as my father will go play soccer and all of that. And as he comes back, oh, food is still, you know, being prepared. But there was actually no food. As they grew up, they learned to understand that that wasn't really cool, but mama was just trying to help you because that's the best she could do instead of her sitting you there and telling you there's no food, you're going to die. So at the end of the day, when parents begin to do their best, children understand. But if you are not doing your best and not giving yourself an opportunity to prioritize what comes first, because every time you bring a child into this world, that child becomes your responsibility. So I cannot buy a suit, Lois, unless I know my children are well fed, unless I know my children will be taken care of. So sometimes also what I come to discover is us as parents also, sometimes I'm not that careful about putting certain things in perspective.
Hey, can you go back? I missed
yes.
a little bit with your grandmother.
Yes.
What was her thinking when she...
Her thinking, like my father told me, her thinking was, to try to help my father and her and his siblings, okay, get by a day. Because as they will go play, they come back, they know food is being prepared. They play, they come back. Before you know it, they come back, they're tired and they sleep. A day has passed.
Wow.
And maybe the next day there were food. instead of her sitting them down and saying there's no food at that younger age, or even getting them to ask her, what are we going to eat? But as long as they would see that, you know, pot on the firewood boiling, they were home.
Wow.
Amazing. But there was hope there, Lord,
right,
where they knew we're going to play, we're going to eat. We're going to play. They'll come back, Mama, it's food ready. Oh, 30 more minutes, go play something. They'll go play. And then to balance it, there were also days where they'll go play, come back, and food is served. But there were days also food was never served. But as they begin to grow up, they appreciate it because they knew that Mama was not cruel, my grandmother was not cruel, but she was just trying to help them get by. Parents all the time, that's what we have to do. And I go by those models as well, trying to help people, you know, understand that these are the principles of life. You're going to have to go through tough times. Well, if you've prioritized everything, well, what can you do? And that's where society comes. That's where church comes. Because to me, I feel like as a church, we are one. I cannot let you go without food while I got plenty. Then are we praying together? Are we really lifting hands together? Because it's not about the ceremonial. It's about life. It's about the connection that we have. And so many times, I've done offerings on the service where I say, somebody here is struggling, they need money. Give them the money.
So it's hope, these things that
yes,
keep people
yes,
optimistic?
That's what it is. That's hope. And see, hope keeps us alive. And beside hope, brother, for some of us who have some set of beliefs with us, to faith. Because hope says, I'm going to be okay. Tomorrow will be a greater day. But faith says, I'm going to be all right, whether it's a greater day or not. So every now and then, we teach people to switch gears from hope to faith. Because hope can sometimes come flat. I'm hoping I'm going to get it. What if I don't get it? That's when faith comes. That maybe it wasn't meant for me to get it. Maybe God has another way. And when you look at yesterday, you will always smile because you made it. But if you look at today, you'll be kind of questioning things. When you look at tomorrow, you will fear. But always look at yesterday because the journey you've traveled has proven to you enough that you can make it. But fear is the opposite of faith and hope. So, you know, there's a lot of talk that we do, a lot of counseling that we do, and just, you know, get to a point even where you see parents crying about their children because there's a misunderstanding or something they didn't get and all of that, and children don't want to listen to parents. I have a lot of these children that they won't talk to their parents. They say, I'll talk to Pastor Albert. I won't talk to you. And the parents will be panicking. I say, don't worry. It's okay. We'll get through this. We'll get through this. So it's hard, Louis, but you know, creating that balance, it's a big challenge. And what I love about God, like that's why I said that the mission is greater than myself, is because I'm both a leader and a follower at the same time. I'm both in that position of inspiring others and sometimes stepping down and struggling myself. And asking God questions about myself, about things that I'm going through in my life, but keeping that strength in me that it's going to be okay because I've seen things turn before. I'm not just talking, but I have proof to back it to whereby, you know, we have this family where we can show that, oh, wow, look how things have turned around. And without putting their business out there, but the other family says, wait a minute, they went through a crisis, they were able to make it. We shall be able to make it as well.
So wisdom is something you gain through different kinds of experiences.
Yeah.
In your life.
Very much. Very much. And to be honest with you, sometimes some of this wisdom, too, I begin to understand that it's not just based on the experiences that we encounter in life. Sometimes it's also based on the hunger and the thirst in our souls to be of help to somebody. Because prayer is so powerful because if I'm earnestly praying for you, what I'm telling to God is, help, Lord. And I begin to, basically, I'm craving of that need for you to be okay. And because God is our Father, He began to supply that wisdom into my soul. Because sometimes I find myself in a position where somebody will bring me a serious issue, Lord. I don't know how to start. And one of the greatest blessings that most people don't realize is the ability to listen and intercede at the same time. I love it. I can sit and listen to someone for hours, what they don't know. By them exposing the problem to me, I'm listening, I'm interceding. God is pointing at the areas where we need to work on. They're actually helping me without knowing.
So actually, they're saying that inside of each of us is the all the tools, everything that
yes.
we need, an abundance.
Yes.
It's already been given to us.
It's already. We're just going to have to dig deep and try to really get deeper again and just be genuine about it, because I do believe that the heart is the center of everything. You know, when you look around our world today, there's chaos and so many things. It's not because we're not smart. It's not because we don't have resources. It's not because, you know, we cannot, you know, make things happen. It's because the heart is not. The heart becomes the center of everything. And a genuine heart is always a great source for God to supply any kind of need from the humanity, because heart is the key, and that's why we purge our hearts. We be careful. That's why I don't want to carry those burdens. I'm quick to understand. I put myself into other people's shoes. I say, wait a minute. If it was me, how would I be wanted to be treated? As we do so, we are actually keeping our heart lighter. So whenever the issue comes, it's like a pipe. You know, you don't want it clogged. When it's clogged, then we need to make sure that we unclog it. But if the pipe is kept clean, then the supply from God, which is the solution, is flushing to our spirit. And we're able to communicate. We're able to find the solution. And somebody asked me one day, said, Pastor, how come you always so optimistic, so positive? I said, because that's all I got. I don't get anything by being depressed. I'm challenged. But I look at the final outcome. If I sit here and I cry about a situation, after the tears, is the situation resolved? No, it's still going to be there. But if I dare to believe that if I think hard enough, if I try to bring myself around it good enough, maybe, just maybe, there is a breakthrough. And I dare to give it a shot every day. I live every day like it's my last day. I don't regret it. This, what I'm doing right now with you, Lois, is as good and as important to me as being behind the pulpit and preaching on a Sunday morning, because this could be the last platform I got to empower you, to empower the listeners, to empower somebody else. So why should I just say to myself, oh, because this is not in my maybe, you know, religious circle or the way I think about. There's no greater day. There's no special day. Every day is special. That's the way I live my life, and that's why I empower people, and that's why, you know, I just go like that, and every time I get an opportunity, that's what I do.
I feel compelled to ask you a question now that I deal with. When someone comes to me and they share with me that as a child they were abused,
yes.
their life was a thing they can't get over the pain.
Right.
How do you help them?
Well, that's a very painful and difficult position to be in, and I've been able to help, you know, quite a few, because it's that pain. It's almost also with the grief, the loss of a loved one, because I've had to deal with that. First of all, what you do, you cannot deny the fact that it happened. Because sometimes when we begin to help people, Lois, the mistake we make is what is. We want them to be placed in a position or stage of denial of some sort. No, it didn't happen. It's the devil. No, this did happen. Now, what I go by, first of all, is to show that person that the real always walks with the counterfeit. What do I mean by that? So, you know, if you have a real $100 bill, it's real because there is a counterfeit bill around it. If there was no counterfeit, we'd not call it real. What do I mean by that? The world is full of evil because acts of abuse pushes people to a corner where they feel like nothing good is under the sun. Now, you have to show them that, first of all, that there is evil, there's also good. And both works together. That's the first principle that I apply as I'm talking to them. Now, the second thing is what is, I'm willing to go as low as possible to begin to become the image of the good that they have to restart learning. And that's a challenging process, Lois, because sometimes I can take a case like that maybe for months, just working with a person. And I'm praying to God. I'm not perfect. I'm human. But I'm praying to God, and I'm doing whatever it takes for me to try to bring up a new picture of the good that will be able to fade away the bad picture in them. Because you cannot tell me that I need to learn how to trust back without you giving me a reason to trust again. And that's what I do, and that's what we have to do. Because at that time now, you know, you have to show me different. And as they begin to get out of that painful places, now the third thing that I do is what is begin now to establish responsibility to avoid that from happening in the future. You don't do that from the beginning and begin to question people. You show unconditional love. You know, you show that there's the real and the counterfeit, and you begin to show that good picture. Once they're out of that shadow, then you're able to tell them, well, can we really talk about it? How did it happen? And most of the time, they were probably naive. Most of the time, they also saw some signs that could have invited the perpetrator of those acts, but they just kind of, you know, play blind eye. This is just my uncle. This is just a relative. We're just playing. And why is that important? Because we want them to be shielded. Because shielding a human being doesn't depend on age. It's not just children. We got to shield some adults too that have been frightened, that have been broken in the past, because all the work that I've been able to do by the grace of God or we are doing to them, if we do not shield them as a conclusive, posing them even more. It's like somebody that will get healed and tomorrow have a chance to fall back into the same trap again. So those are the three steps that I go by. And it takes time, it takes work, and sometimes I have to refer them to somebody that is close to them more than I am, and sometimes I have to. And the key also in all of that, Lois, that is so important as well, is remaining confidential. People trust you with their lives, with their secrets. Please don't even share them with somebody. I don't even share people's secrets with my wife because they did not trust her with God. They trusted me. And any piece of broken trust will be so hard to be rebuilt that you will lose the person. And instead of you being the one to help them get out of that abusive, you know, path, oh, you're going to push them even further down because how dare you after I've trusted you? You know I told you people are evil. I told you people are not worthy to be trusted. You told me to trust you. Look at what you've done to me. So it has to be, you know, going through those stages. And it's difficult, you know. It's difficult, but it's not impossible. I've seen it happen. You know, I see it happening around. And the joy, I remember one time I met a young lady who's married today, and she told me that she would never get married because she was sexually abused. And we began to talk. I began to help her as we go, to the point where she realized where there's still good men out there. And she's married and happy and blessed. But the work that we've done and the length of it, Lois, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. And so many times, you know, we have to keep that genuineness in us. And I insist on that because anything that comes of sort of not, I wouldn't use the word impurity, of a distraction to the main goal kills everything.
So how do you, when you're going through all this with the people that come to you, how do you heal yourself each time you walk away?
Very important, very important. What I do is what is, as I go through them, I carry a burden. And one of the things that a lot of people don't understand in ministry and in any kind of position where you are helping others is that loneliness that comes and invades us. Because I got things I can share. Mm-hmm. So it stays with me. But the best way to deal with it that I've been able to do, it has been to balance the load of the information that is being downloaded onto me and the joy and the sparkle of hope that I see in the person. You know, and then I begin to rejoice even more than them, but they don't know that. When I see progress in them, I say, wow, this was worthy. I can let this go and cling on to that, because we always cling on to things around us and in us, because nothing is lost. Everything is being recreated in us. So somehow that's how I'm able to do it. And it becomes difficult, because sometimes when you're dealing with a case that is so hard to handle, now you need to be balanced enough to switch back into some old victory and bring them back into you. Because this one here, you're not making progress at all. But you got to go back sometime and say, wait a minute. Last year I had a case similar to this one, and although it was so hard, but look at what I see. Look at, it may not be identical, but I believe, let me work this way a little bit. Let me try to do, because if you don't do that, the Lord will really crush you and you stop leaving. Because when people bring you their problems, you partake in this problem. And if you don't be careful now, you cannot even enjoy your meal because it's their problem in you when you're talking to somebody. So whatever place and circle, like when I'm in family, I'm in family. I don't talk about business. I play with my wife, I play with my kids. I do everything. Why? Because that's their moment. And when I come to church, so, you know, a day has 24 hours. I refuse to be different for a couple hours pretending. No. I am the one you're getting. So if we're going to sit down and talk the way we are doing it, I'm giving you my undivided attention. If I'm going to, so anything I do it with passion, I do it with strength, I give it my all, because that's how you're able to impact someone. So I try to balance it like that, whereby, you know, when you see the sparkle, you see the hopes that the person is portraying, you say, wow, we're going somewhere. Let me flush out this old and flush in the new. But if there's no new to flush, you got to be careful, because at that time it becomes a weight on, and sometimes it becomes very depressing. But that's why I believe in prayer. That's why I believe in the miracle, because, you know, when I hit a dead wall, I say, God, I've done my best. You do your best.
So how do you begin each 24 hours, and how do you end each 24
Wonderful.
Hours?
Wonderful. I begin each 24 hours with prayer, which is very, very important. To me, I begin with prayer, and my prayer, I'm probably going to shock some religious people, it's unconventional, meaning that there are times where I'm on my knees, I close my eyes and I'm praying. There are times where I sit in my car for maybe 20 minutes or 30 before driving to the university or somewhere where I'm going, and then I do my devotion and I pray. You know, sometimes I pray loud, sometimes I pray in my heart, and that's where I start. I start my day with prayer. And then with that prayer, my biggest, you know, intercession of the day from the beginning is, what is God, whatever I will do today, let it be controlled by you. Meaning, let me impact somebody's life. Meaning, let me be a blessing to somebody. Let me be you among my peers, among the people that will come through me. All right. Now, as the day progresses, every time I see something contrary to what I prayed for, I pray even more. Because it's not what I bargained for in the morning. One of the challenges, and I'm teaching some of our, you know, brothers and sisters and young and old in the church, is what is prayer is so powerful, Lois, that you can use it anywhere, any place, and people don't even, prayer doesn't need a protocol. People will not even know. If I'm sitting with you right now, and I feel like you are projecting something that is negative to me, just an example. Why should I just sit there and take it? I can start praying in my spirit and saying, why is this happening? It's not what I bargained for. God changed the situation. Something needs to happen here. And before you know it, now you begin to smile back. Because, like I say, one of the things that people don't understand is what is, if you don't know that balance in you, we carry a lot of loads with us and we lash it at the wrong people. A husband and wife had an issue last night, but this morning is the coworker that they're yelling at. That coworker has nothing to do with what happened in that house that night. So what I do, when I begin to understand all of that, I pray. And literally in my spirit, I'm saying, lady, why would you be mean to me? Because I didn't do this to you. You just met me now. What's the issue? So I begin with prayer, and anything that I see that is not right, I pray. And as the day progresses and before the night, I try to do my quick review of my day. How did it go? What happened? What I could have done good, better, and all of that. But I don't do that to defeat myself or to beat myself down, because I just believe that as long as I put up my mind in the morning not to hurt somebody, not to be on somebody's way to destroy them, it could happen. I'm a human being. But I say, God, help me to do better tomorrow. And each day that God gives me, I may not see tomorrow. I only have now and today.
Well, I know in this moment that we've had together,
yeah,
I can feel that you have been totally focused on me, talking to me, sharing these parts about you.
Yes.
It is so unique, and especially a man that I know what is going on in your life. I know that there are things coming at you from all directions.
Right.
But I appreciate the fact that you were able to sit here
and
focus and share with me.
Yes.
And I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Lois. And my I'm so appreciative, too, because, you know, sometimes when I'm given a platform to empower you who are sitting with me today by the grace of God or anyone else, it's the essence of my existence. That's why I leave, is to do what I can do. And to me, it's just my little contribution, because I believe that if all of us can begin to give these little contributions of ours, we'll accomplish a lot.
Thank you, and God bless you.
You are welcome. Bless you, too.
On behalf of Integrity in Action, we want to thank you for listening to Integrity in Action with Lois Shulman. Join us monthly the third Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For more information on guests, your host, Lois Shulman, please visit BodyMindSpiritRadio.com and visit the Integrity in Action show page. And until next time, good night.